other issues occurred, this committee, due to its onerous schedule, often has members in hospital recovering. However, the recent member to go into hospital is not recovering in that sense. They were in a car accident, serious car accident. They've got two broken legs, among many other injuries, and that is the Honorable Buyani. So I can't comment further than that. I will be speaking to the Deputy Chief Whip, who also comes from Mpumalanga, to ascertain his situation. Honorable Mantash has come out of hospital. She'll be joining us tomorrow. Then we've got the Honorable Van Skalkwyk, whose province requires, that is a senior political member. She remains there for a particular lakotla, so she's on political leave this week. And who else is there, Honorable Madima, in terms of the apologies? Those are the only ones I've received. You're welcome back, Honorable Kacharya, from your leave. We also want to welcome back the economist attached to this committee, Mr. Kwanda Madalani, who's been seriously ill for over a week now. And then the Honorable Albert, whose father is critically ill in ICU, is also put in a late apology. Honorable Williams, thank you for being here this morning as well. Thank you, Honorable Khadebi. I know we really appealed to you, and as usual, you came to the fore to assist us in your senior capacity as an alternate whip for this committee. Thank you. On that particular note, we have also to note the late apology from the Department of Science and Technology. That's why I asked someone, what's the traffic like? It's really problematic for them. However, Mr. Hermans negotiated with Aspire Art Auctions to come before to precede the department. So on that note, we would like to request someone to propose the adoption of the agenda. Yes, Honorable Van, Honorable Tierko. Thank you. Honorable MacPherson, you're seconding it. Thank you. The Department of Science and Technology will come immediately after Aspire Art Auctions. Aspire Art Auctions, we have Miss Emma Bedford, Senior Art Specialist Director. Please go ahead. You know, you'll have the floor for about 20 to 30 minutes, as it were, to yourself, and then we'll engage.
Right, thank you very much. How do I get this projection?
While we're waiting for that, I'm sorry that I didn't recognize you, DDG Nietzsche Tenzi, the Deputy DDG of Consumer Corporate Regulation Division, Ms. Padiachi, Deputy Director, Mr. Makunza, over there, yes, IP Officer, Ms. Matonza, Socioeconomic Impact Assessment System. Right, Ms. Zandila Konyani, Chief Director. Right, okay. Have we recognized all of you? Because I don't remember seeing your little hand. You are?
Melma. Admin Officer, Socioeconomic Impact Assessment Unit.
Thank you very much. We also have Parliament Senior Legal Person here, Advocate Charmaine van der Merwe, who's attached to us for this bill, and Saraj Naidu, the Parliamentary Liaison Officer. So at that point, we've got the system working, haven't we?
Okay. Unfortunately not. I would like to have it projected.
We're used to now the system going to sleep, so let us just work some hard copies.
Okay. Well, hopefully a technician will arrive shortly and can project this. But in the meantime, good morning. Thank you very much for giving me this opportunity to present a submission from Aspire Art Auctions. I'd like to introduce my presentation with a piece of music that has become a classic case of copyright law. Composer Solomon Linder on the right, taken in 1941. By 1949, more than 100,000 copies of Mbube had sold. Over $15 million is estimated to have been earned from its use in The Lion King alone. While Solomon Linder died in poverty in 1962, his heirs will now benefit from the past and future sales. So if we go on.
One moment, please.
Do you all have copies of this?
I have the misfortune to have a black and white, but never mind.
Okay. Okay. So,
all right. Time is on our side, so just take it easy.
Okay. So, currently visual artists benefit from a legislated artist resale right in 80 countries around the world, largely following provisions in the Berne Convention. The artist resale right provides an intellectual property right for artists to benefit via royalty payments on the sale of their works in the secondary market. So, when the work of an artist sells for the first time, in the primary market, which is generally the art gallery, the artist obviously benefits because they get a portion of that sale. But when the artwork sells in the secondary market, such as the auctions or perhaps a gallery again or through a dealer, no benefits accrue to that artist in South Africa. In some countries, the artist's resale right extends to the estate, the heirs, and the foundation of the artist, enabling a sustainable approach to the heritage of these particular artists. So if you go to the next page. Currently, there is no legislative framework for artists' resale rights in South Africa, so this has been mooted in the existing Copyright Amendment Bill. While royalty structures in some art forms exist and are enforced, notably in music, literature, and performance, including stage, television, and film acting, no such structure currently exists for the visual arts or craft, which is also introduced into the bill.
Just pause a moment. We've got the technician.
Seem to just go dead. Oh, there it goes. But I can't actually move them or advance them. Sorry, don't leave.
We need the light a little bit lower. Are you able to zoom? Especially that one there.
It's clear enough, I'm sure. Okay. No, we run quite efficiently. Okay, shall I just recap this frame? So currently there are no legislative frameworks for the artist resale rights in South Africa, though this has been mooted by the existing Copyright Amendment Bill. While royalty structures in some art forms exist and are enforced, notably in music, literature, and performance, including stage, television, and film acting, no such structure currently exists for the visual arts or craft, which is also introduced in the bill. The art world in South Africa has a strong established secondary market and an extensive private and corporate collection profile. Aspire Art Auctions launched into this market in 2016 with successful inaugural auctions in Johannesburg and in Cape Town. The company is focused on secondary markets for historical, modern, and contemporary art, and from the outset has been committed to the economic sustainability of the art market in South Africa. It is motivated by a wish to improve the economic conditions of artists in the country and help keep them making art. This extends to contributing to the redress of the structural inequality on racial lines that exists in South African art, which is one of the cornerstones of the legislation as it's currently amended. Accordingly, Aspire introduced our own artist resale rights effective immediately from our inaugural auction in Johannesburg in 2016. This in-house scheme offers a sliding scale of royalties on the current European model and is only offered to living artists, not to estates, heirs, or foundations. In the absence of a legislative framework, and unlike other countries where collection agencies are established by law, South Africa currently offers no legislative provision for the work of its artists to attract royalties from secondary market sales, and the current provisions in the bill have little by way of implementation detail or details on which agencies would collect royalties and how they would do this. 16 living artists benefit from Aspire's inaugural auction in October 2016, for which we paid South African artists a total of 83,645 rand. From our Cape Town auction in March this year, 33 living artists were paid a total of 56,777 rand. And from our recent Johannesburg auction, 36 artists are currently being paid 92,535 rand. So in less than 1 year, as we're a new company, Aspire Art Auctions has paid the sum of 232,957 to living artists. The long-awaited implementation of the artist's resale right is an investment back into the industry, acknowledging the value of authorship and ensuring support for artists. The inequality of artists only profiting from the initial sale is compounded when one considers the rise in value of an artwork over time in relation to the growing success of the artist. So Aspire's resale royalties initiative endeavors to return some of that value to living artists. Accordingly, Aspire currently undertakes the total cost of this undertaking. This is by no means enough to sustain the market, but it offers players, but if other players follow and a legislative framework exists that includes royalties for secondary market sales of the works of visual artists, then the cultural and heritage value of the country's visual artists can be sustained for all South Africans. As Aspire Art Auctions, we therefore call for an urgent amendment to the existing legislation under discussion to include the provision and extension of royalty rights to visual artists for sales of their work in the secondary market and its proper implementation and administration by a legislated, independent, and industry-specific agency. Louis Macrobella's extraordinary work, Exiled King, made in the early 1960s, so post-Chartwell, offered on our Cape Town sale this year at an estimate of 60,000 to 80,000, sold for a well-deserved 300,000 rand, when bidders who realized its historic and cultural value competed fiercely for it. I met Louis in the early 1990s while I was working at the South African National Gallery. I went to London with the idea of curating an exhibition by artists in exile. He left South Africa in the early 1960s and never to return. So when I recently wrote to tell him that we had sold his work and we owed him some money, he was delighted as he was having to pack up and vacate his studio. And this is what he wrote back to me. "Your email was like a whisper from the old ones. A grand affirmation of ethical," his italics, "market practice, goodwill and generosity that really made my day." So, to conclude, it's the right thing to do. Aspire Art Auctions is making it happen. Others should follow. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Bedford. And I am sorry that we started off with a technical hitch, but we did finally get everything, and I can see why the colour was so important, and to have it overhead as well. Thank you. So, members, this is a very different kind of input, an art auction. We get it from there. It also links to something we've heard about in the past, the Lion King and the musical. But let us hand over to yourselves for a moment. Questions, comments, go ahead. No questions and comments. Honourable Pachalia, Honourable Khadebe, right, for the Honourable Tiako. You, Honourable Easterhaze, and I apologise.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've heard with interest what you've said, but my training leads me to believe that the value of a commodity is what a willing buyer pays, to a willing seller at a particular point in time. That's what governs the world that I operate in. What you're proposing seems to me to posit a change which posits a moral right on the part of artists and creates a nexus sort of between them and their work even after sale. I find this reasonably problematic. I understand the moral dilemmas that people may face, but if I'm dispassionate about it, I can think back to times when I sold my property for a song, and later, because of changed circumstance, they fetched millions. It's life, as I say. I'm not sure how we deal with this. Can you elucidate further?
I think in this case we're talking about the intellectual property of an artist. It's recognized that musicians, playwrights, authors benefit from the resale of their works. And so we're saying that visual artists should be included in that. Very often their works are sold for a very small sum while they are still developing artists, and as their careers improve, their work can be sold for phenomenal amounts of money, and they don't benefit from that. And we're saying if musicians like Solomon Linda or any other number of playwrights or authors benefit, so visual artists should benefit as well.
You were a little bit faster on the draw than I was. We normally don't do, you know, an immediate response. We like to get all of the comments and questions.
Okay.
If I may, and I should have explained that. And then when you're not using the mic, you need to turn it off. Right. Apologies to you. Right. Okay, Honourable Khadebe.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. First of all, I'd like to appreciate the presentation made by Aspire Art Auctions. I don't know this entity. Is it a private entity? Is it a government-owned entity, or is it what is it? In space, where is it operating? Is it only operating in the private space, only in South Africa, or does it go across the borders? I think I need to know that. And then that Imbube song you started with is very emotional because we know that there are a lot of movies which have used that. But if the descendants of the original owner are not going to benefit anything out of that, I think it's the travesty of justice. You can go to just look at Coming to America. The very opening of the movie is based on this song. And it was one of the successful movies produced. But the issue is that did the family of Solomon Linda benefit anything out of that? If this bill is going to rectify that, I think that it is in the right direction. But what worries me is the issue of the resale part. Because as you said, that in South Africa, the artists tend to the artists are paid when they sell the original part. Now, you are correct that as the years pass by, the value of the art usually, it increases, is a given. That's why you go to Van Gogh now. These pictures of Van Gogh at this point in time, and when he was living, look at the price. They're radically different. But I think that there must be some sort of a way that his family or his descendants must lend benefit out of that. So what do you think must be improved in the bill so that such things can be covered? Thank you, Chief.
Thank you, Honourable.
Thanks, Chair. We accept and say you have done a good job, and thanks, Aspire. But I want to check, because there's no legislation in South Africa for the resale of arts. How do you reconcile your submission, considering the Clause 6 of the bill, and which provides for royalty? I was requesting Mr. Matima to read this Clause 6. So how do you reconcile the two?
Yes, thank you very much. Honourable Esther Hazer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. One of the main goals behind copyright law
is to promote and develop art and protect art. But technology has changed much of that, and in copyright law, like Mr. Gubela's work, there's a misconception that because an image like this might be available online, it's free for everyone to use. And we try to create or to reward creators for creativity. Do you think the copyright law will do that?
That is Honourable Eustace Hazen? Yes. Thank you very much. Yes, I too have a point which to some extent follows on from what Honourable Khadebi had said about artists from the past, the musicians, etc., benefiting. You referred to, you made a phrase or sentence such as, you know, it would be important for the bill to ensure that artists, broadly speaking, could benefit not only from the proceeds now, but from those in the past, previously or the past. And I was wondering just how that came together. You know, were we looking at some retrospectivity, possibly, or what were you looking at? And what provision do you think, if you're looking at the bill, I've no doubt you've read our bill, is there anything here within the bill itself which you believe, if we strengthen, if we reword, we'll be able to capture this point? And if you can't think of it right now, you can come back to us in writing. But it really is very helpful when we get specialists such as yourself able to direct us to the bill. The final point you know, you speak about artists' resale rights here in South Africa. You're speaking from an auction house. You are not the artist yourself, but perhaps that is your speciality. And you could comment on what, with respect to the benefits that would accrue to an artist through using an auction, how do you think it should work in that regard? And how do you see yourself when you hold up this work of art and start taking bids? Where are you in this food chain, this value addition food chain? Someone is the artist, you get the next person and the next person, etc. Where do you see the role of an auction house in this value chain? Thank you so much, Ms. Bedford. Yes, Honourable Tiako?
It's clause 9, on the bill, the resale of royalty rights.
Okay. To address Honourable Khadebe's question, yes, Aspire Art Auctions is a private entity. It's a business, as are all the other auction houses in South Africa. No, we're not a government entity, although, you know, as I indicated, I worked for the National Gallery for 25 years, so I've worked in the public sphere and the private sphere as well. How do we conduct our business? We have an office in Johannesburg, we have an office in Cape Town. But our auctions have very wide reach, as South African art has, and in all its forms, music has global reach. So on our first auction in Johannesburg, we had bidders on the telephone from the UK, Europe, North America, Australia, New Zealand, and many other parts of the world. And these are people who are bidding because they are interested in South African art. So South African art is increasingly of interest to people across the globe. And there's increasing competition for it. And it's achieving phenomenal prices. not everything, but you know, there's increasing demand for, and I'm speaking now mostly for visual art. So what can be improved in the bill? We do believe very strongly that visual artists should benefit from the secondary sale of their work. Very often an artist will start off with a gallery and their prices are quite low, and as they develop more of a local and international market, their prices can increase and go through the roof, so to speak. So artists sit on the sidelines watching these prices going crazy and knowing that they're not benefiting from it. I think, and that was our submission, it's the ethical thing to do. The fact is that this has been done quite legally and easily in 80 countries abroad, which is what the point I made in my presentation. This is not something that's coming out of the, you know, blue in South Africa. It's being done across the world. Artist resale rights are practiced in the UK, in the European Union, in Russia, in Mexico, in Canada, I think, in Australia, New Zealand, in most parts of the world, significantly not in the United States. And there's a very strong lobby from the United States to not do this. And so it's a contentious issue in the United States, but it's accepted practice across most of the world. So, Honourable Chico, I'm not quite sure what the how do we reconcile artists' resale rights in the bill? Well, I think that we need to consider, or I guess the standing committees need to consider whether they believe that this is the right thing to do. We as a company are doing it voluntarily. We're just paying out of our own profits. It has. There are examples that can be followed. You can look at the way artists' resale rights is practiced, for example, in the European Union is probably the easiest way to go. You can Google artists' resale rights. You can look at, they have a body, a legislated body called DAX, which distributes money to artists. So at the moment we're just doing it ourselves. But it really, you need a separate body that would be dealing with artists. And for us, we've only been paying living artists. For us, it's just too complicated. We're a new company. We've only been going for less than a year. So, but we've all worked in the auction field before, so we're familiar with the auction field. We just think that it should be run a little more ethically. So you need an independent body who is going to collect those monies. We would pay to that body, and that body would distribute to the artists. The moment we cannot deal with estates and foundations, etc., it's too complicated. We don't have the time to trace that. This independent body, legal body, legislated body would need to work out, you know, who are the rightful heirs. And in the case of Solomon Linda, his heirs are now benefiting. There is, there has been legal redress. A lot of it is still being contested. I mean, there's nothing like American law for contesting these things. But you can look into this. You can Google Solomon Linda and Ruby, and you can get some interesting information about how much is being paid to the heirs. Honourable Esteisen, you asked a question about the goals behind copyright law. I'm really talking more here about artist resale rights than copyright per se. So I can't claim to be any fundy on copyright. I can say that having worked in a previous auction house for 7 or 8 years, that copyright doesn't always, it certainly can act to protect the intellectual property of artists, but it very often works against artists. if you're looking at a struggling artist and their work is selling for 4,000 rand, and the auction house has to pay copyright to reproduce an image, and we're going to pay, at most we would say make 400 or 800 rand out of the sale of a work of 4,000 rand, we're not going to illustrate it. We can't afford to. So what tends to happen is that the artists who need it most are not benefiting. In fact, their careers are going down because people are not reproducing their work. And a case in point is Azaria Mbata, who was one of the first artists to register with a copyright association. And how many people remember him or know his work? Or, you know, when it comes to market, we can't afford to illustrate it. It costs us more than we would make, and we are a business. We do have to, continue. So it works in the favor of the more successful artists whose work sells for much more money. But that is why we think that an artist resale right, in a way, is more equitable in that the artist benefits from the sale. How your question, Madam Chair, about how to benefit artists in the past, that is complicated. I don't know whether we can take it on. I think it would be very logistically and administratively difficult and expensive. But I think perhaps there should be provision for artists' families who feel that they're owed redress. But how you put that into place, I'm not sure. We'd have to give that some thought. So, and then there was a question about how artists' resale rights work for artists. Well, at the moment, we're just doing all the administration. We work out, but we do it only for living artists, and that's what I illustrated. You know, we have been paying back, and we feel it's the right thing to do. It is an affordable thing to do. I think that to pay living artists, when it gets to being much bigger, it's quite a challenge. But it's the right thing to do, and I think that this is what auction houses and people in the secondary market should be doing. So I think it's important that it is included in the legislation. From my experience, there are strong lobbies against it. I believe that in the States, Sotheby's and Christie's auction houses have spent over $1 million fighting, lobbying against artist resale rights. You know, money that could have been put to better use, I think. So there is a strong lobby against it. And here too, I think you will find there's been a strong lobby against it as well. I did want to say, though, that I think that if you are looking at implementing this locally, that it is not going to work to have a flat rate, you know, 5% across the board, because that, again, is going to benefit the artists at the top end of the market. So what you need to, what you could consider is the European model that I mentioned, where they have a sliding scale. And so, and that's what we have adopted. So for artwork selling up to 50,000 rand, we pay 4% to the artist. From 50,000 to 200,000 rand, we pay 3% to the artist. From 200,000 to 350, we pay 1%. From 350 to 500,000, we pay 0.5%. And for works exceeding 500,000, we pay 0.25%. So you can imagine, you know, when you're dealing with an artist like William Kentridge, whose works sell for in excess of 2 million rand, to pay him 4% in a way is counterproductive when we really want to be encouraging the artists at the bottom end of the market and to make their practice more sustainable. And this is the way it works internationally. And that's also on those websites, sliding scale. So that's something I would urge to think about.
Ms. Bedford, for our secretary, would you just repeat the figures, please, for the committee secretary?
These figures that I've said. Okay. So for most of the payments, internationally, they don't pay under a certain amount. So when it's 100,000, when it sells for 1,000 rand or 5,000, you have to decide that, you know, it's so administratively demanding to pay on very small amounts of money. But let's say up to 50,000 rand, we would pay the artist 4%. And from 50,000 to 200,000 rand, we pay 3%. And then from 200,000 to 350,000, we pay 1%. And then from 350,000 to 500,000, we pay 0.5%. And for all works exceeding 500,000, we pay 0.25%. And we are only paying South African artists, and at the moment we're only paying living artists. But we're not paying, we do sell the work of foreign artists, but they have, we don't pay them. I don't know what will happen if they're agents find us, but we'll have to deal with it. Our focus, our mission is to support South African art.
Thank you very much, Ms. Bedford. I think a couple of the questions that we would still want you to respond to, we'll put in writing to you through the committee secretary, and if you would respond in writing to us. But thank you very much. We apologize again for the technical hitches. Interfered with your presentation. Thank you very much. You. And if you would just take a little back seat there or two bottom here and be welcome, so that we can welcome the department, is it of science and technology, is that right? Science and technology. We got the apology. Would it have been from Ms. Van Veit? We got the apology.
Sorry, Chairperson?
We received a late apology from Science and Technology, and I think perhaps it may have been Ms. Van Veit. I don't know who Ms. Van Veit
is. Yes, thank you, Chairperson. Yes.
Right. And it's just as well because the technology wasn't working. All right. Now, members, look, it's just 20 past 10. We're going to, do you need to just come forward? Are you on the right computer? Are you able to get the, oh, you have got it over here. That's fine. As long as you're able to work from there. But you need to come here, sit here. Is that all right? And just so that you're also aware of the system, not everyone seems to be. When we have the engagement, we should have the questions first and comments, and then you would be responding after that process. But let us allow you to introduce your presentation. We've got Ms. Carol Van Veit, Director, Knowledge Management System, is that right? And then we have Ms. Shumi Pungal, Deputy Director, Advocacy and Policy Development. Is that right? And I see a lone gentleman here, sort of no-name brand. What is your name?
Thank you, Chair. My name is Tom Sugnandan, Chair, and I'm from the Department of Science and Technology. Tom Sugnandan. Yes. Chair, perhaps it's an opportune moment to thank you for giving us this opportunity to submit our presentation. Chair, in terms of apology, we would like to apologize on behalf of our IPR content experts. Unfortunately, due to the time constraints, they couldn't make it. But however, they did indicate to us that they will provide written responses to questions that pertain to the IPR Act. Essentially, our concerns are around the Indigenous Knowledge Systems Bill and the IPR Act. So my colleague Shumi Pango and Ms. Van Wake will talk predominantly on the Indigenous Knowledge Systems Bill and how it impacts, or how the Copyright Bill impacts on the onto the IK Bill. With that saying, Chair, during the course of the presentation, I will have to leave because I'm double booked. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much for coming here. We do try to work closely, certainly the committee, with science and technology, as you know, because we both share the same goal, to improve on the protection and advancement of intellectual property law for our people in all its different, as it were, genres, as you know. So, please, thank you so much for coming along to us. The floor is yours.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, honorable members and colleagues. Once again, my name is Shumi Pango from the Department of Science and Technology, and I will be doing this presentation to some extent on behalf of the National Intellectual Property Management Office, NIPMO, and to the largest extent on behalf of our office, the National Indigenous Knowledge Systems Office. Just to give a historical background to the Indigenous Knowledge Systems Office of the Department of Science and Technology, as you will recall, in 2004, Cabinet approved the IKS policy, which contains an overarching principle for the recognition, affirmation, development, and promotion of Indigenous Knowledge Systems. And as a consequence, the DFT established the National Indigenous Knowledge Systems Office to implement the policy and coordinate IKS activities in the country. In the policy, one of the policy imperatives was the development of the legislation for the effective protection, promotion, development, and management of Indigenous knowledge systems. And to that end, DFT has drafted an IK bill which has been introduced into Parliament. In terms of the IP innovation and the National Development Plan, all right. The Department of Science and Technology is leading and coordinating activities geared to the protection and promotion of IKS through the initiative called the National Recorder System. The Indigenous Knowledge Systems Documentation Centers are the operational arms of the NRS initiative. This facilitates the documentation of IK that emanates from rural and local communities. They are recorded and cataloged in an electronic system. The Indigenous Knowledge Systems Documentation Centers constitute a network at provincial level and hold the Indigenous knowledge on behalf of the participating communities for its protection, promotion, development, and management. So the NRS is the entry point for the protection, promotion, development, and management of IKS and IK-based innovation and business development. In relation to NIPMO, as I indicated, in the National Development Plan, it is stated that innovation is the primary driver of technological growth and drives higher living standards. And innovations may be described as a multi-stage process whereby organizations transform ideas into new and improved products, services, or processes in order to advance, compete, and differentiate themselves successfully in the marketplace. Universally accepted that IP and the associated rights are a critical aspect of innovation and economic growth. In other words, the IP holds at least one of the keys to our future. Just to give a little indication in terms of what IP is all about, intellectual property refers to a creation of the mind, which manifests itself in different disciplines. Divided into two categories, we have industrial property, which includes inventions, signs, plant varieties, masks, and logos. And copyright includes literary work, music, films, and so on, as well as computer programs. So the intellectual property rights then are the rights given to persons over the creation of their mind, namely a patent for an invention, a plant breeder's right for a new plant variety, or a trademark for a mark. I'm not going to go into detail on that slide. I will just jump into this slide that indicates the purpose of the IPR Act, which provides then for more effective utilization of IP emanating from public finance research and development. And this IPR Act gave birth to the establishment of NIPMO and the IT Fund. And this provides for the establishment of offices of technology transfer that are in the institution. And the objectives of this IPR Act are as follows. IP emanating from publicly financed research and development is identified, protected, utilized, and commercialized to the benefit of the people of the Republic, whether it be for social, economic, military, or any other benefit. It is meant to enhance human ingenuity and creativity, which must be acknowledged and rewarded. It also gives preferential access to small enterprises and BEE entities. How is then the IPR Act applied? The application of the IPR Act is based on all recipients of public funding received from a funding agency who use these funds to conduct research and development. And these recipients include higher education institutions, science councils, and state-owned enterprises, private individuals, companies, and those who receive public funds. The funding agency is the state organ of state or a state agency that funds research and development. Now, we are going to introduce the definitions as they relate to the copyright. The definition as it appears in the copyright bill reads as follows. Copyright management information is defined as information including metadata attached to or embodied in a copy of a work. This is what is on the left-hand side of the slide. On the right-hand side is the concerns from the Department of Science and Technology. The DST is concerned with this definition as it creates an impression that all metadata is copyright management information. Given that the National Reference System is documenting indigenous knowledge and it uses metadata. And therefore, we are of the view that not all metadata is copyright management information. The scope of protection, section 2. Section 2A, subsection 4, states that notwithstanding the provisions of section 2, no protection shall extend to an expression. From DST's perspective, it is quite law that no right exists before the expression is reduced to a material form. We are concerned that this subsection will be misinterpreted with the IK Bill, which grants protection to cultural expressions of folklore. I want to register the fact that this paragraph has been amended, and as such, it does not include recorded or documented in the National Recorder System. And to that effect, there is a request for clarity. In the terminology, extend to an expression, given that copyright does not exist prior to the creation of an expression. So the DST would request clarity in that regard. Section 5, which relates to state and copyright. Copyright shall be conferred by this section on every work which is eligible for copyright and which is made by, funded by, or under the direction of or control of the state or such an international organization as may be prescribed or local organization. The concern is that currently the DST is recording and documenting indigenous knowledge through indigenous knowledge documentation centers that I indicated in my introduction. And this is done from the communities with the express undertaking that the copyright and intellectual property resides with the community. In other words, that is how the IK Bill explains the state and the copyright and issues around ownership. And therefore, communicating to communities that upon the death of the practitioner or the holder, ownership will be transferred to the state, given that it is theirs in perpetuity, will have serious implications. And that will cause contradiction to the IK Bill. Firstly, state ownership of indigenous knowledge contradicts the IK Bill, as I indicated. And secondly, it defeats the notion that IK transcends from generation to generation, as state ownership will terminate custodianship of communities. Maybe just to give a brief background in terms of IK and what IK is. In South Africa, we haven't defined indigenous knowledge. What we have done is to give criteria for indigenous knowledge. And one of the criteria is that for it to qualify to be protected under the proposed IK Bill, it must transcend from generation to generation. And it must have a social identity that can be pointed into the community. So if the copyright that we are talking about today transfers ownership to the state, that defeats then that criteria that is proposed by the IK Bill. Copyright shall be conferred by this section on every work which is eligible for copyright and which is made by, funded by, or under the direction or control of the state, or such an international organization as may be prescribed or local organization. The concern from the Department of Science and Technology is that there is no definition for what constitutes state funding. So the copyright does not provide any definition for state funding, and therefore there is a disjuncture in what is proposed by the copyright. And therefore it is assumed that for every organization that receives funding from the state directly or indirectly, they are by default state funded. And thus every work which is eligible for copyright shall belong to the state. That is the assumption we are gathering from what the copyright says. Thus, for all the higher education institutions, science councils, and other entities who are doing research, when research results are reduced to material form, the copyrights in the laboratory book belong to the state. Thus, the HEIs and the science councils cannot convert their research results into a publication or into a patent application, as the rights belong to the state. And therefore, the IPR Act mandate cannot be implemented. It is therefore recommended that funded by is not introduced into the section. Section 6, nature of copyright in literary and musical works. Provided that, notwithstanding the transfer of copyright in a literary or musical work by the user, performer, owner, producer, or author, the user, performer, owner, producer, or author of such work shall have the right to claim an equal portion of the royalty payable for the use of such copyright work. From the FT's perspective, this proviso suggests that indigenous communities will have the right to claim an equal portion of royalties, which means then that the community has to share their royalties with someone else. And this is not the case in royalty transactions. And the above concerns prevail in sections 7 and 8 of the copyright. And therefore, to that end, the FT is requesting the following. We request that there must be a removal of the word equal, given that technically it is only communities or authors who receive royalties from publishers by way of assignment of the copyright.
Hold on there, we're just trying to locate that here on the bill. We know you're on slide 14, for example, and you're referring to that right-hand side. On the top of page 5 here. All right, thank you very much. I must say we appreciate your slides being numbered. A lot of presenters don't number their slides. But it does assist us there, but now we've also got to take it across to the bill, you know, when you make references. Thank you.
Thank you. Section 9A on royalties. Resale of royalty rights, section 9B. Note the correct heading should be artist resale rights. Section 9B, 3, states that any of the user, performer, owner, producer, or author will be entitled to receive the royalty. The FT has the following concern. From the indigenous community perspective, communities will have to share royalties with the user of the artistic work. It appears that there is a lack of understanding regarding the relationship in the context of the resale, section 9C, 3, is both a concern to indigenous communities and difficult to achieve in practice. This section of the bill has direct reference to traditional works in the IP Laws Amendment Act, which implies a different context, meaning that for indigenous communities to benefit, they must upload their artwork in the DTI database. Section 9A, A, and C reflect a lack of understanding of the nature of indigenous knowledge. Individuals in their own right cannot be holders of indigenous knowledge. They merely act as custodians or representatives of the community. Once more, this is taken from the criteria of indigenous knowledge as anticipated by the IKB. It is communally owned, and therefore no individual in their own right can own the work. Section 9F has to be redrafted taking into account individual indigenous artists who die interstate. We are opposed to testamentary disposition, as this is a Western concept, and it is in conflict with customary law and practices. We recommend that the law of succession which is then used. Recommendation. 39B1, the inclusion of the word original has been suggested. And then that section will read as follows. The author of an original artistic work shall enjoy an inalienable right to receive royalties of the work. So we have recommended the inclusion of original. Section 9B3, there's a need for clarity of the term user, as in certain instances under the same clause, it is used as a standalone term. I'm referring to 9B1, while in 9B3, it is lumped with performers, producers, and authors. So DST would like clarity in terms of why, in some cases, it is used as a standalone, and others, it is part of other. Section 9C3, reference must be made to IPLA, given that collecting societies will be granting licenses for traditional works. Reference to IPLA will remove the confusion that the work is a product of the National Recorder System. So reference to IPLA will assist in demystifying that perception that might be created. We are still in 9A. Section 9A, A and C. Wherever indigenous communities are mentioned, the word representative should be included. This is based on the previous comment that I made that talks to indigenous knowledge being communally owned. And anybody in the community who is going to act on behalf of the community is then the representative of the community. Our view is that the bill contravenes IPLA, as the author is an indigenous community, which notion does not exist. Can I clarify that, Jen? All right.
Thank you.
In clarifying that statement, the FC is of the view that an individual author can be part of the community, but there is nothing like indigenous community being an author. So those are two different things that we need to be clear on. So it is not correct then to say author / indigenous community. An author is an individual, indigenous community is a collective. Indigenous communities, through their representatives, often find themselves in the position of not being the legal owners or authors of works that draw on their knowledge and knowledge system. 39F, inclusion of a sub-clause to provide for situations when an individual indigenous artist dies interstate, or when for some reason their will is invalidated. So there is a recommendation for an inclusion of that sub-clause. Section 12A, fair use. Our concern is that the introduction of personal use exception is now legal. This would have a profound impact on the misappropriation of indigenous cultural expression in the name of personal use. It would now be legal to download music for personal use. Section 12.1a, we are of the view that responsible handling of research results should be taken. Where confidential indigenous knowledge is accessible, it must be done under mutually agreed terms. The IK Bill makes it mandatory for users to obtain prior informed consent from communities on mutually agreed terms in a language that the communities can understand. So we are requesting that this be taken seriously, and it should not, we should not create a situation where the IK Bill is contradicted. Section 24, orphan works. The DST endeavors to protect works in the National Record System from becoming orphans by collecting as much information as possible at the point of acquisition and ensuring that information is entered and maintained in the National Record System. We note that while copyright protection in the NRS is automatic, the ability to contact a holder or practitioner may not be possible. Another concern is that the bill also provides that the state will own all orphan works, including works where the author is deceased. According to the DST, that to us is a concern. The implication is that on the death of an author, copyright ownership will not pass to the heirs, executors, or deceased estate, but rather to the state. And this has implications for the National Record System, as most practitioners and holders who are documenting their indigenous knowledge are near death age, which then means that the work that is in the National Record System, according to the copyright amendment, will then belong to the state. Those are the implications that we find on the amendment. The orphan works problem disproportionately affects access to the cultural traditions of indigenous communities because the right holders for these works tend to be especially difficult to locate. Given the fact that it will be difficult to locate indigenous artists previously residing in rural communities, large amount of money will remain indefinitely in the state fund as envisaged in section 22. Once again, there are issues of clarity. Section 21, the commissioned work. The ST would request clarity on the following. Section 21 makes certain types of creative work where the commissioner owns the property of that work. Section 21 includes portraits, photographs, a recording, and the making of cinematographic work, which includes a documentary. We can't ignore that the work will be exploited on multiple levels, so we have the default position of a broadcaster commissioning and then owning the content. Given that the broadcaster now owns the content, it will be difficult for the broadcaster to license it to competitors. The idea is to have the work reach a wide range of audience. Other comments? Collecting societies. Our question is whether the collecting society for works in indigenous knowledge under IPLA will apply in this instance. Whether the copyright tribunal referred to in section 29.1 repeals the commission contemplated in section 43.1 in the IPLA. The concern is also raised regarding extensive provisions on performance protection rights. There is, however, already a separate Performance Protection Act matter pertaining to that area and should be dealt with in an amendment to that act and not in the copyright bill. However, more importantly, we raise our concerns as to why the IPLA was not extended to performance protection. We can now expect the DTI to amend IPLA to include traditional or indigenous performance control over performance and hopefully accede with the WPPT. We are pleased that the bill puts an end to the copyright provisions restricting the sale of parallel imports of grey goods. Much of indigenous products have been manufactured outside South Africa, depriving communities of business and development opportunities. The memorandum on the objectives of the Copyright Amendment Bill, the memorandum accompanying the 2017 bill, introduces a new right, indigenous work. This is 7.9. We query if this term conflicts with traditional work under IPLA. And with that, Madam Chair, we thank you very much for it.
Thank you very much, Ms. Pankhu. Is that right?
Yes.
I'm glad your presentation was so well notated, because it has assisted. There's a lot of complex information here and a lot of important points that you have made. And we really do appreciate you taking the time to come and share this with us. Thank you. But let us turn to, if I can ask you, Ms. Pumler, to just switch off your mic, please. So we're going to turn to the committee for a moment for comments and questions. Honourable Khadebe, Honourable McPherson, Honourable Yesterhazen, Honourable Lowe, in that order.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm looking at this presentation, and then I'm getting worried. I'm sweating what I have now, because it looks like there was no consultation between the DTI and us and science and technology, because the differences are so wide and fundamental. So the question I'd like to put, because any bill, even before it comes to Parliament, it goes through the Cabinet. If it goes through the Cabinet, I think that the executive authority from science and technology should have gone through that have seen that, and then so that this thing could have been arrested, because basically we are right, you are going to rewrite this bill now the way it is. And then the other question would be the issue of this bill, which is going to be piloted by science and technology, is that this bill is not yet an act of parliament. So it means that if you can speak earlier or consult earlier, there are a lot of things which you can be able to eliminate. You have problems in consulting each other. That's the first question. And then on the issue of this issue of offense, we know very well that even according to the law of South Africa, if a person dies interstate, whatever his estate falls under the master of the court, which is the state, which ensures that it is perpetually, the people who are affected are going to get to what is due to them. But I think that here you are actually lambasting that, because I thought sometimes, because we know that in this issue of the art world, there are a lot of sharks there. People will run away with some other people's money and ensure that it is not distributed to the earth. Is it not better when it goes to the state? The state ensures that it goes where it's supposed to go to. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you for raising that point of consultation. It is a matter of serious concern. We'll raise it again. Honourable MacPherson.
I'm just trying to find the mic here. I just want to discuss the issue with regards to indigenous knowledge and the rights of individuals to claim copyright. So one of the reasons that we were told that this bill is so necessary is because indigenous singers, writers, artists, etc. are dying as paupers, and they are not getting compensated for the works that they are doing. They are getting reproduced and copied elsewhere, and there's no right to be financially compensated. And I agree with that, actually, because I think that your view of indigenous knowledge is mistaken, that it's sort of a broad view, broad ownership context, whereas those people who are forwarding indigenous knowledge, whether it is through playwright, song, authoring books and that sort of thing like that, requires extensive research, extensive understanding, extensive investment into those works. And so I therefore think that they do have some claim to copyright of indigenous knowledge or content that they would be reproducing. So it's strange to me that on the one hand you have the department that's telling us that one of the big reasons for this bill is that those types of people are not able to claim anything, and you're coming here and saying, but no, we think it's wrong that people can claim indigenous knowledge as their own. And let me give you an example. The people around this table may be living in a community together. There may be one shared story, but there will be many interpretations of that story or many views of how that story should be told. So I'm not sure that it would be fair and correct to say that story is unable to be copyrighted because there are many different varying views and interpretations of that over time has passed. So I'd just like to understand why you believe that view is. But then on the other hand, you seem to contradict yourself when you say that you don't agree with Section 12A of Fair Use and the introduction of personal use for indigenous knowledge or cultural expression because it could be misappropriated. But then on the other hand, you don't want indigenous knowledge to be copyrighted. That doesn't make sense. You can't have it both ways. It has to be protected in order to stop it being abused for personal use. So I'd just like to understand your views on that.
Honourable MacPherson, Honourable Lowe.
Thank you, Chair. I tend to agree with the Honourable Khadija, and he knows it's one of the few things. It's very rare that we agree. It's very rare that we agree. Yes. I think the Department of Science should have consulted with DTI. Like, it's disingenuous that they come and sort of stating all of the recommendations. I mean, they fall under one state, and one would have thought that they would have communicated with each other before coming here and raising all of these concerns. That was the only point, because all of these recommendations that they have made, Chair, I really think it shouldn't have been tabled to us. It should have really been tabled to DTI for now, and then they could have worked through it, and then they could have come with a substantial proposal. And while we are doing all of this footsie-footsie with this bill and not finalizing it, our indigenous knowledge in South Africa are being exposed. And one of the ones that have just came out in the recent weeks is that of Louis Vuitton and the Basutu blanket. Mm. And while we are really, you know, we should stop playing this delaying tactics and just finalize it and get it over and done with, so that our people can really benefit from it, Chair. So the department should really try and get the communication strategies in order. Mm. That is, for me now, really getting out of hand. We can't sit for so long with this. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Lowe. Honourable Esterhazen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Inventive and creative finding a financial source, and the state may be in this case now, who fund their investment. They are required then to sign over all the intellectual property rights to the state being funded, if I understand this correctly. Like the amendment also say, universities will now lose to government copyright in the works of the academics and their employee, and the same will apply to any other institution that's been funded by government. So, in other words, textbooks, for one, can be reproduced. I think the word used in the bill is if it cannot be obtained at a reasonable price. But what is a reasonable price? So they can be reproduced in the hundreds of thousands. And the original author will lose out on all of this. So any hope of income of authors and creators published after state funding will be lost after copyright vests in the state. And they might even be required to be licensed by the state before they can use their own work, which is really like broadcasters, for one, as well. They believe by default that they are owners of the copyright of, But I think the bill is poor quality of legislative drafting that went into this bill, and the bill fails to deal with lack of compliance. And what we need to is a balance between the right of the creators and owners, and copyright must be protected for future creation. Mm. Thank you.
Yes, Mr. Hazen. I think what I need to make here quickly, given that some of our members have joined us this year, earlier on, some years back, the Department of Trade and Industry tabled a bill, the Intellectual Property Laws Amendment Bill, went through the committee at great length. In fact, we even went over to Geneva for a week training, etc. Very, very complex. And after some time, we were able to form a unanimous position and process this bill out of Parliament, and it was adopted in that. Now, so in fact, it went through the Department of Trade and Industry, the IFLA, Intellectual Property Laws Amendment Act. What does concern me is the point you raise on 23 in that regard, of, with respect to one of our own bills. Your reference to user has been made by many other presenters who've been here and other issues. But I want to make another point here. A reference has been made to yourself as science and technology for not consulting with DTI. I must also ensure fairness here. We're not sure at this stage who didn't consult with who. So I would ask the Department of Trade and Industry to make it their business, and the Department of Science and Technology, we've had this, as the Honourable Khadebi knows, once before, where departments had not consulted and come to us. And it is very, very important that the two of you find a common ground and you find each other, because this went through Cabinet, you see. We have bills that went through Cabinet. And if you go through Cabinet, that tells us, or it's supposed to convey to members of Parliament who exercise oversight, that there is a common position in the government.
Mm.
Everyone in the government holds this position.
Mm.
So when you come here, we don't have this waste of time.
Mm.
Now, I think that this is a very serious matter. Trade and industry and science and technology have got to get together. We cannot avoid each other any longer if that has been the case. I want you to find each other. And I am going to call you both back on this issue. Because I want to call you back when you have found each other. Because what is said here is very serious. Very, very serious. In short, it says we did not consult each other. I don't think we have the time for this. Honourable Lowe, you are quite correct, as is Honourable Khadebi in this regard. We do not have the time for this. And meanwhile, you know, the expression that Rome is burning while Nero fiddles is very much here. I'm not going to allow it. I will not allow it. So, this is a very well documented presentation, so it should be very easy to engage with the acting DDG, Nyetse Tenzi, and to say, look, let's find something here. These are both bills. These are two bills. And they are urgent. There are problems with user and things like that. Let us not say this across the board, you see. There are certain things you pointed out even in our own legislation, if I can put it correctly. But there are other issues which you have pointed out which conflict with the indigenous one you're working on, knowledge. And I think we ought to try and get together and produce something or two different bills that complement each other, don't contradict each other. I think that is my appeal, please. But having said this, it is a very well-documented presentation, and if you would respond to members.
Thank you, Chair. I will respond as follows. I'm not sure if I should respond to the first. Alright. Regarding consultation, we submitted input to the copyright amendment. And not very far off from what we have presented today. And therefore, the honourable member who suggest that it is disingenuous to come here and contradict one another is a bit unfair, because we did present and submit our input to the copyright amendment. Whether those inputs were considered or were not considered, that is another story for another day. However, when you make inputs, you are not forcing that your inputs must be considered. You do that knowing very well that they might be rejected or they might be considered. And we are using this platform to say once again, this is our input. They might not be considered even after this sitting. And there isn't much we can do about it, because we would have done what we are supposed to do. Beyond making our inputs and submitting them, we cannot force anybody to consider our inputs. That is the first thing. The second question deals with the orphan works. The IK bill, one of the criteria that would make the work or the knowledge to be protected under the Indigenous Knowledge Bill is that it must be protected in perpetuity, which is the reason why we have developed the National Recorder System, which I referred to in my presentation. Because one of the reasons why we developed that system, it is precisely to curb this issue around orphan works, who most of the time are lost or fall in the wrong hands. And it is our responsibility, more especially as the Department of Science and Technology, we have been tasked through the IK policy of 2004 to look at the interests of our communities. And that national recorder system documents that knowledge from the communities so that we avoid as much as possible to have an orphan work. And we know for a fact that people who document mostly on that national recorder system are those people who are just about to have their works as orphans. So in avoiding that situation, we then record that work so that the National Recorder System as a supposed as a hub, a national asset, which is owned by the state, acts as a custodian in the event a community cannot be identified. The state plays a custodian role, but the state does not own. Until that time the community is identified, then whatever benefit sharing agreements and everything else that was done on behalf of the community is then given back to the community. There was an issue around individual ownership versus communal ownership. Again, in our criteria for the protection of Indigenous knowledge, we are saying that knowledge or that work will be protected under the IK Bill if only it is communally owned. However, that does not imply that an individual cannot have their own individual knowledge. But it cannot be traced to having transcended from generation to generation, because once it gets to there, it then ceases to be an individual work. for individual knowledge. And we have been upfront to say, if an individual in the community can prove beyond reasonable doubt, with the assistance of the community, that that knowledge is theirs and theirs alone, they will follow the conventional IP rules to protect their knowledge. However, we are aware of the fact that some of it might have been derived from that which is communally owned. And there is also a provision for that. So it is not a question of forcing everybody to say, even if it's yours only, then you must share it with the community. I don't know if I'm clear there. So we have two systems. One system is looking at issues of communality, and we have another system that looks at issues of individuality. So when you can prove to us that this knowledge is transcending from generation to generation, it can be associated with a societal and cultural identity, and it can be used, managed, and developed, then it will be protected under our IKB. But if it doesn't meet that criteria, it then goes to be protected under the conventional IKB. The reason why we have this different kind of breed, which is the IK bill, it is because the criteria are different. With the conventional IP regime, we have 30 years, that with your patent after 20 years, it expires and then it is in the public domain. And with the conventional, before your rights is an incentive for you to do something. With the indigenous knowledge, the knowledge has been there for generations, so you have no incentive to come up with anything. It's not novel. And because it's not novel, we want to protect it in perpetuity. We are not going to have any 20 years or 15 years or 50 years. So that is the difference, and we want to make that distinction very clear. Because even with the national referral system, it is a voluntary system. No one is forced to document their knowledge. The only reason or the only recourse is that if then there is an infringement on your knowledge and it was not recorded on the national referral system, we cannot enforce anything because it was not there. The only advantage of having your knowledge documented in the national referral system is that in the event somebody claims on that knowledge, then we are able to say, but this knowledge belongs to that community, it was recorded on such and such a date, it is here on our catalog.
Thank you very much. Do you want to complete the last one?
The last one, I wasn't sure whether it was referring to which bill. This bill, the IK bill, or...
Madam Chair, thank you. On page 13, your page 13, you refer to state funding and that everything now is funded by the state, and that my concern was that any hope
Honourable
or income...
Mr. Hazen, you're not on mic.
Yeah, he is.
He is.
He comes on here.
No, he's on mic.
But I'm sure she can hear me. On her page, referring to state funding, my concern is now that state funding now involves all. Everything will be loose after any body or anyone is funded by the state. The author will use the right. They must even register by the state to use their own work. That was the concern that I was raising on their page, on their work.
I just want to make it clear, it's a piece of legislation, it must all be recorded. But let us leave this for the moment, because your first question was, you know, won't you respond?
I still don't get the question whether you are saying because it is publicly funded, then it must.
Clearly, this is a
I do
understand what Honourable Yesterhazen is getting at, because this has come up in other presentations, and then you've referred to the similar thing again. So if you could try and give your interpretation, or as you understand it.
My understanding is that we have the IPR Act, which talks to public-funded research with the knowledge and understanding that state does not own IT. That is point number one. Now, here are the higher education institutions and science council. They get funding from the state, right? And they do research. And according to the copyright, you must then reduce whatever into a material form, and then they will have your publication, and they want to apply for patent. The impression then that is given is that they are unable to do that because the state is going to own the IP.
Can do it, and they do it, but they don't wish to because they would like to retain ownership.
Yes.
That's what you're saying.
Yes.
Right. Does that seek in clarifying the question, Honourable Yesterhazen?
Really, I don't know if I'm getting used to. I'm just commenting from what in their presentation.
Let me suggest this. Let's put it in writing so that it's quite clear and seek a written response. Because I do understand what the Honourable Yesterhazen is getting at, and I think it's an important point that will assist us going forward. All right. So can we agree on that?
We agree.
Thank you. I don't think there are any more outstanding questions at this point. We will, once the two departments have seen and spoken and discussed issues with each other, we will ask you to return. Honourable Lowe?
Sorry, Chair, because I have a lot of other questions as well, but I would like to do a written submission to them. Can I do that before we're going to meet them, or? Yeah, all right.
Like, you've made the separate presentation. We've got it here. We've got a number of queries. All right? Let us put this to you in writing. Mr. Medema, are you going to be sending it along? Yes. Make sure that Honourable Yesterhazen, Honourable Lowe, everyone here has that opportunity to express their question clearly. Because this does, it's very clearly presented, and it assists us to ask the written questions, and I think sometimes that helps you as well. And then today is Tuesday. I think we can ask for it before next Tuesday. What do you think? Right. So let's say by next Monday, afternoon so that we've got it on Tuesday next week, a week time. Thank you very much. And thank you to both of you. We earlier on got the apology from Mr. Sukhananda. Is that right?
Sukhananda.
Sukhananda. And so Ms. Sanvej, Ms. Shumi Pangul, thank you very much for your time and for sharing that information with us.
Thank you, Madam.
Members, there's a short tea break there. I don't know if there is tea or whatever. If we can take 10 minutes. We're also going to recheck the room, make sure the technical equipment is working. Wanted to get set up for the concert. And now we don't even have sound. No.
Here we go. Let's do and amend the bill according to the way that is favorable for all
have a fluent, non-confrontational, and very open kind of dealing. Music is my business.
Hi, my name is Bongani Matondo. I'm an author.
Before you rush, before you apply your political mindset, put on your community, your local, regional, country, street-level cap, your mindset, and think,
hi, my name is Robert Kasi, Paranana PJ Jira, Royal Field, and they saw important in my life. I've seen them changing a lot of people's lives, like, because sometimes, most of the time, you work from people who have nothing and you see them having something.
Hi, my name is Una Aki. I'm a composer. I'm a performer. It's very worrying when the user who uses our art creates it. Has more power over us and benefits more than us. This is our livelihood.
Thank you, Jayla. That is our video presentation for now. As you can see, honorable committee members and chair, that you know, from what you've seen on screen, it's a really, really well represented cross section of South African musicians, composers. Multi-generational, and even also what you see in this chamber today really spreads across generations of South African entertainers that have been responsible for what many term as additional national anthems, such as you know, African Dream and Kalakata, and you know, more recently tracks like Good or Sun in My Pocket. So these are things that define a whole culture, a whole nation, and you know, just some aspects of the bill which I would like to, you know, to allude to now. The current status of copyright still means that you pay for use, but in the digital era, you know, with the access to technology, the implications of what originated when the internet was invented, the safe harbor legislation, which was intended to protect those who developed the internet from being sued by people who unscrupulously post someone else's copyright. It was a well-intended piece of legislation, but as we've witnessed now, 20, 25 years later, it directly resulted in the value gap. Who's going to pay 15 Rand for a song on iTunes when they can get it free on the internet? The average human being is disposed to rather get something for free. Thank goodness there are those with a conscience who would have some care for intellectual property or copyright that will pay, gladly pay, and feel that they've contributed to the economic sector. But that, unfortunately, is not really the general behavior of human beings. So the lessons to learn from the above, while fair use is very, 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 very closely linked with technological advancement and the access of people to technologies, one has to be very, very careful that it's also balanced with the rights of those who create inventions, songs, poetry, and other creative works. In that search for a balance, perhaps the answer is the technology itself. There's things like blockchain, hash coding, smart contracts. These are all things that are now possible, and we really, really need to spend some time to engage with those and see how those can serve us in future and in time to come. As for the 25 years assignment right, I just wanted to mention there that the old Dickens clause, it really is now outdated. Record companies don't spend millions and millions anymore on artist development. Production costs are substantially lower. There's not the big costs of manufacturing CDs and having to protect that investment and take years and years to recoup your investment and eventually show a profit. Artists, we're regularly on tour. You know, some of the artists develop their early work in their hotel rooms from technology that's available on your laptop. You know, video. Shooting videos now, you know, the production costs have come down. Record companies don't nearly spend what they used to on artist development and the related costs of developing copyrighted material. So to say that, you know, a period of 25 years is fair, that no longer applies. The book also says a period of, where it should rather say a period not exceeding, because there are many preceding contracts in place. Most publisher and record company contracts or 3 years, perhaps with a two-year option. So, you know, even 5 years would be fair. Why should a composer or a past, a late composer's estate not be privy, not be in a position where they can benefit from the creation of such a composer. I would like to now hand over to my esteemed colleague, Ms. Ernestine Dean. You will know her from a group called Mood Phase 5.
Good day, Madam Chair and the members of the committee here today. Thank you so much for the opportunity. I've been singing for 26 years. I started as a young girl. My first professional gig was at the age of 16. Born and raised in Grassy Park. And for 26 years, I've been singing and writing my songs. It's taken me to various countries, and I've had the opportunity to live and work in Europe. I actually moved with my family to Germany some years ago because of the lack of legislation here. And so I had the opportunity as a SAMRA member to work with the affiliate called GEMA, the German Musicians Association. It is a strictly regulated business. The music industry is taken very seriously in Europe. The venues and broadcasters are all their members of GEMA. And as a musician living and working in Germany, I was also able to benefit from something called the Soziale Künstlerkasse, which is insurance, health, legal aid for unsalaried creative workers. State-funded taxes are channeled in a way so that there is benevolence and provision for musicians in need. Recently, we buried Mr. Errol Dyers. Not too long before his passing, we buried Ray Peary. I wrote some words after his funeral. He is unfortunately one of those musicians, a cornerstone of our music industry. We will only hear their names and sometimes maybe their music on the radio when the funeral is announced and not in the living years. So these are my words, widely shared on social media by followers. There is a cultural state of emergency that our people of today are oblivious to. The South African musicians are dying one by one with nothing. The very ones who played for freedom and sang for freedom, abroad and at home. We played for freedom, Mr. Mandela was freed. We were used in the voting campaigns across the country to show the masses how to apply for a barcoded ID, how to vote for the very first time. The new South Africa we had sung for, played for, saw every sector except the arts regulated, charters developed, but the arts abandoned, particularly music. Zero regulation, zero appreciation of our contribution, of the worth of South African music as a cultural export and what it could bring in for our GDP. Twice colonized, our own culture is diluted more and more every day by the loyalty of the broadcasters, the advertisers, the consumers, to the international music makers offshore. Billions leave our country in airplay royalties, particularly to America. Peter Gabriel has a song called Biko. Mama Africa, Mary Makeba, put us on the map. Paul Simon saw the value of our unique sound and created the Graceland album and tour with South African musicians Tony Sivras and Dave Peeney. The whole world knows Mbube, the lion sleeps tonight. Do South Africans know that it is a South African song? We pay R1,000 a ticket to see international acts and complain about paying R100 to see local musicians. Several of us, the musicians, have to leave the country, play overseas where we are valued, pay taxes and contribute to the gross domestic profit of other countries, then come home to bury our comrades who gave their lives to playing for this country, our people, only to die penniless. It is a dire situation. Let us be heard, let us be played, and may we have the regulation in our music sector that would protect us and stop this cultural genocide and violation of the human rights of musicians to survive and die with dignity in our own country. Madiba, who loved the arts so much, must be turning in his grave. Madiba, who loved the art, must be turning in his grave. Madiba, who
too much to add what they've already said. I mean, in my perception, this is very clear. We need more regulation in this industry, especially with things like venues and live performance. If a venue sells liquor, it's by law that they have to have a liquor license. We believe that the same regulation should apply for music. I think it's very easy to overlook it sometimes because it is entertainment. But the music industry is an industry, and there are hard workers working day and night to make sure that they can survive, and this is very important, and it's livelihood, it really is. So we believe that the current copyright law is outdated for a digital era where music can be shared so easily, and we want to call upon all of you to really consider this and add more regulation into this industry.
Just remember, this has been transcribed, and that's why I asked for this as well, so that you mention your name. So we just heard Andrew is it Chaplin or Chaplin?
Chaplin.
Chaplin, right. Okay, how do you pronounce the group?
It's Larkinwell, you had it correct.
Yes, I thought so, but someone laughing like, I don't know what, I never knew. All right, do proceed. So give your name then,
Christine,
and then remember to turn off the mic.
Thank you. Okay, my name is Brian Chaplin. I'm the other half of the group, Larkinwell. First of all, thanks for your time and for hearing us out. One thing we did want to add is that we feel it's very important to clarify the blurred lines between the terms fair use, fan use, and unfair abuse. The definitions need to be clearer because it's very easy to talk about things like fair use for things like education. But if a new popular song in particular comes out, it's far more likely to be disseminated on everyone's devices within minutes. Also, due to the fact that there are thousands or more different copies of the same material, it's completely unfeasible to leave every such possible infringement up to the court to decide whether or not the use is actually fair. These days, a popular song can go viral, and of course, we're all very grateful for that, and we should embrace the technology that allows it to do so, but the laws need to catch up. And copyright and intellectual property needs to be protected for all the artists. Thank you. The last point I'd like to bring up. Tech companies and internet platforms alike are making billions off the music that the composers and authors are creating. A business can't make money without their product, and we are the creators of that product. So I would like to, again, call on you to think about this seriously, and I urge more regulation in the industry. Thank you.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Vicky Sampson. I'm a composer, performer, also serve on the interim board of MASA Western Cape, the Musician Association of South Africa, and I believe I'm a bit of an idealist. I'm talking about the difference that one song can make within any living or deceased musician's life and their family. Over the past 2 decades, the song My African Dream has sustained my family and I through earnings from licensing, royalties, and live performances both locally, intracontinentally, and internationally. I have felt and seen the spirit of our nation being changed and uplifted, both on stage and on the streets of our country, thanks to this remarkable song. I was there to perform the song in 1996 at both the opening and closing ceremonies of the African Cup of Nations, which South Africa won. Then again, in 1999, this song and I were united at the Union Building as then-President Nelson Mandela handed over the reins to President Thabo Mbeki. A proud moment indeed. And so, not only has the song empowered, enabled, and put bread on my table and my extended family, but it has also become a beacon of hope and inspiration to an entire nation. It has crossed all barriers from age, color, and religion, and impacts my life still today more than ever. It still enables me to pay my bills. I humbly now request that this committee please not take away our rights as citizens, musicians, workers who care very much for the future of an industry already at risk from various other areas by allowing this bill to proceed in its current form. I thank you and will leave you with an excerpt from the song, My African Dream. All I want is for our hearts to be beating just as one, to silence this confusion. Then the pain and the illusion will disappear again, and we will never run, 'cause in my African dream there's a new tomorrow. My African dream is a dream that we can follow, and though it would seem our hopes are an illusion, my African dream is an end to this confusion. I thank you for your time.
Thank you very much.
Afternoon, everybody, Madam Chair, and the whole committee. My name is Kwesta Dakar. And I represent the culture. My first point is this, before I even go too much into it. I would like to say that it is, for me, a little weird. I find it a little tricky to have a committee discuss, say, maybe from before today. I'm not too sure when the discussion started. But if you have songs like My African Dream and Sun in My Pocket, you know, and you've settled and taken your trade to other countries and settled in Germany, and songs like Ingoots. I mean, personally, I'll say that with everything that I have personally done, I did from, it all started in some bedroom. It didn't start in a big multi-million kind of studio, right? But the effect that it's had on people, right now with the product that I've created, I've, on YouTube alone, on the networks and the platforms, well, they call them platforms, I have at least contributed over, I don't know, 15 million views out of that. And my fear with this bill is that will that ever affect the state of my family at all, you know? Will that be on the table, and will that feed my family? So it's fear. I fear that if this bill is ran and practiced, that all those things will just be numbers that will not directly benefit me nor my family. Right? See, I represent a culture called hip-hop, right? A genre of a music called hip-hop, and I've seen this grow, you know. It did start in far lands that are not South African, maybe, you know, at least the commercialization of it. But I've seen it grow to become the very core of what the language of the youth is today, you know. It's not even just a song anymore. It's like a lifestyle thing. If you see what represents a 15 to 25-year-old today, I mean, they don't even just like the song or anything or sing along to the song. They address hip-hop, you know. They speak hip-hop. And all of, so with what was done in that little bedroom has affected so many people so much that it has changed their culture. What does that mean for me as the artist that might have helped or maybe might have contributed in such a cultural phenomenon to everybody, you know? Again, my fear is still the same. Will this affect, in at least positively, my family or not? It is still a question mark, and I think the fact that it's a question mark is a problem that we have, you know? And another thing is that it's weird to be represented by, or to not be consulted about what's going to happen to the work that you did in that little bedroom on your own before the conversation started. I think whatever should have whenever this idea came up to come up with a bill like this, first thing that should have been done, should have called the artist. You know, I believe that whatever conversations that have happened without the artist are really just not even falling on the right ears, or are not in representation of the artist, because as much as it is in the artist's responsibility to kind of know maybe how to register your stuff and things like that, but if you're going to say something that will affect the artist and the artist's families and everything like that, the artist is the first person you call. So I think already at this point we have missed a lot of steps getting here, you know. And it saddens us that we actually, what I believe, were actual servants of the people directly, you know. To have a room of 25 people sort of represent the work that you did that affected 20 million people without your consent is a really big problem for us, you know. So as much as, an empire is going to fight an empire, DTI is going to fight the technology, science and technology, you know, in representation of the artist while the artist is on the floor, not even knowing if this will affect him or his family. You know, we're at the bottom of the barrel fighting over crumbs that is discussed by major people that have no interest in the arts, and I think that's already a problem. Thank you very much.
This was
the staff for the Kazi, huh? Yeah, Benzo Cuesta Villarreal.
Chair, so if I may, just in closing then, in terms of our presentation, you've heard from, you know, in our video, you've heard a pretty unanimous position that the bill in its current form, we as artists on the ground, we do not feel that there's been enough consultation, and specifically we would like to refer to the fact that the user lobby was granted a roundtable meeting with the FXI, the Freedom of Expression Institute, and Google. Were granted a roundtable discussion with various stakeholders before we got to the stage of representation. And maybe it should only be fair that there should be a similar roundtable discussion with the actual artists, not those companies who represent them. We strongly believe as a composer lobby that we've been lawyered and academic'd out over these issues, and not enough of the bread and butter and nuts and bolts issues have been to the attention of those who have to decide over this bill. Lastly, the issue around local content is extremely critical for us. The original draft had a clause that referred to that down to percentages. We don't think that it's for the copyright bill to be talking that in detail, but certainly there should be some reference to the importance of local content towards the protection of copyright. We've developed a draft clause, a very short clause that I'm quite happy to read for you, if the chair would allow me another few seconds.
We don't have the best sound system here in Parliament, so, you know, it's very important we only have one mic on at a time. It's a bill. Now, fortunately or unfortunately, it is now a parliamentary bill. It's here in Parliament. It's no longer with the department. You know, that it's here. Now, various things can happen. We have a bill here. This is the bill. It's no longer a draft. It is the bill tabled in Parliament. And one of three things can happen to it. We can reject it outright and get back to the department for whatever the technical reason. Secondly, we can amend it here and there and find there's not much to amend. We agree with this, that, and the next thing. Perhaps we have 20% amendments, having done public hearings. Or it becomes even more radical to the point where we amend 60-70% and virtually rewrite the bill. So it is here in Parliament, this bill, and not with the department. So you do, in that sense, now that it's in Parliament, we do have, perhaps you could call it a slightly different style, and you are here with the coalface. You are with the people who will be exercising oversight over the legislation from four different parties. He may have just, popped out at the moment, but there's the IFP, Honourable Eersterhazen. Oh, you changed your position. Okay, fine. No, it's fine. You have the Honourable Lowe from the EFF, Economic Freedom Fighters. You have the Honourable Tirko from the ANC. You have two members of the committee at the back there, the Honourable MacPherson, the Honourable Kacharia, both from the DA. And you would also have had the Honourable Elvis, but he's away on compassionate leave from the Freedom Front. So you've got a broad range of parties here. So we can't, go backwards, as it were, and say, you better start the process again in the department. The bill is here now, and we've heard you. And we appreciate the advice we get ourselves from staff members, from committee members, who say, let's hear those who actually do the work. Yes, that came from the committee. Just exactly what you said. And we do appreciate what you've given us, but as I said before, we have a specific, the Protection of Performers, etc. Bill. We have a very separate piece of legislation being put on the table, but the copyright is the overarching piece of legislation in this regard. And it is here that we hope to take some of the critical issues into account to take forward. Now, one of the issues you've referred to is the local content. And I say this under advice. I don't see our legal advisor here. If she is here, Advocate van der Merwe. Because my own understanding was that the legislation of local content would largely lie with ICASA, but as I say, I am not a lawyer. Yes, as a kid to Vandermeer, is this the case or not? Or have I got it 50% wrong and right?
Thank you, Chief. Yes, it is one of the concerns that I have in respect of the Act. The Constitution in more than one section deals with certain portfolios and certain functions being allocated to certain departments. So I think that there are two sections in the Constitution that we might have to grapple with if we want to add this to this bill.
All right, so you can see there the lawyer, most lawyers are diplomats, has given us what I call a very carefully worded response, which is neither no or yes. Okay. So we will look at it. The department is sitting behind you, drafted the bill, prepared it for here. They must have done their own research as well as the matter. And they will be responding in due course on all of the points that are already made. So we're not saying we ignore what you say. We're not saying that. But we also have to work within the law. That is what I am saying. But we appreciate the innovative way in which you approached your presentation. We apologize for the poor sound recording. So let us turn to the committee and ask if you have any comments, if you have a question. I saw Honorable MacPherson's hand first, Honorable Esterhazen, Honorable Kierkel, in that order. All right, and Honourable
Lowe. Thank you very much. Unlike the chairperson, I do know who Locke and Bull are, that they're two men and not a woman or a man, and that they're not a, it's not a name for a person, but we'll excuse you, chairperson, for that. I think that you've raised something interesting with regards to music online and digital music. I understand some bit of it because my brother's a music producer. And how does it work in terms of the copyright that you would probably have to buy to use pieces of music in a song and then sort of reframe that song as something as your own, because it would be bits and pieces from something or from a number of songs. Could you just explain to us how that process works if you're creating a song with other pieces of digital music? And then I want to agree with the sentiment expressed by the previous gentleman. I think it is a tragedy, quite frankly, that the department has undertaken this process, and you're not the first people to have expressed that they haven't been consulted with, they haven't been communicated with. And quite frankly, if it's up to me, at the end of the day, heads are going to roll in the department, because this has been so badly put together, it's unconstitutional, and we need to understand who's responsible for this. And I see Mr. Nishitenze shaking his head, but at the end of the day, the buck has to stop with someone, and it's going to stop with someone in a big way. Because the state's intentions of this bill are diametrically opposite to what has been put on the table before us. So thank you for expressing your views in the strong manner that you do. And I personally think it's a disgrace that none of the artists were consulted on this, yet big groups like Google were. I think that that's unacceptable, and I want to put that on the record, Chair.
Honourable MacPherson, allow me to say one thing, certainly not in defence of the department. When this came, when SUMRO approached the President as a group representing artists and two other three, the Queto and the this and the that, they actually went to the President. And that is why you then got this other bill. And apparently they were, I don't want to use the word interviewed, but they were engaged by the presidency and DTI, and I'm talking of 7 years ago. Of course, it's an indictment that it's taken so long for us to move beyond that. Honourable Esterhazen, I did note you, Honourable Lowe.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Technology is you mentioned, as kind of much of the copyright law, not only in South Africa, but all over the world, the internet and all that. And very sadly, up-and-coming artists are not usually in that bargaining power, that's not the and as a result, they often find a way for their rights to all the intellectual property rights to some big name or creator or whatever. Every creator is almost always the user of someone else's material. The lady next to you that mentioned The Lion Sleeps Tonight. You, by the way, made the hair on my arm stand up when you were singing. But very sadly, once you sign over your copyright to a label, you have got no legal ground to claim it back again. The flip side of this coin is also, if it wasn't for the intervention maybe of the music label, it wouldn't have become anything. You become something, or a line sleep tonight became an international hit. That's the flip side of it. But we also, don't also want to see the blood and the sweat and the tears that went into this just be taken away. And I think my personal opinion as a broadcaster are the main culprits. So they believe, by default, they are the owner of the copyright, and they will play a song over and over and over, and there will never be any royalty paid or anything back to the composer or the artist who saw the song as well. And we must try and through this amendment, like the chairperson said, this is only in Parliament amendment law, see that somehow the composer regained some control of the original work. Thank you.
Thanks, Jay. You must appreciate that Parliament is your interest. And we are here to serve your interest. This copyright came at the right time, according to me, because it is after we have observed as politicians the challenges our artists are going through. So you need to give us submission, objectively so, and say this is what we feel it will make our lives better as artists, because the deal is here, and we are here to serve your at your best interest and to make sure that we better your life. So we are not here to take out the income. Vicky Thompson, I was young, I was dead, and so all those. And the song, when it rang, it sang on the radio, you just run. Go and listen to the song. The way the mood was, it was. So we are here. We will make sure that you better your life. It is because of the engagement, that's why we're amending this bill. And we will have a good product after this. So we are not here to reverse everything back. We are here to make sure everything is fine. So be rest assured, we will make sure that your best is better.
Thank you very much, Honorable
Tiago.
Yes, you're quite right. We are Honorable Lowe.
Thank you, Chair. And I think, Chair, you will have to start to use my marital surname. Otherwise, that man will ask his cow back. Eh? You will seriously have to begin to. Believe me, I also struggle to pronounce it, but you will have to try it. Start somewhere.
Well, it must have been congratulations then.
No, it's like I
because Parliament told me you were Miss Lowe, you know.
I've been married for over 3 years, though.
Well, it took Parliament that long.
Yeah, exactly.
It took them that long to get my name spelling right. And so, but it's actually Honourable Flanguini.
Yes.
Flanguini Lowe.
Yes.
Thank you. My apologies.
Thank you, Chair. For me, the presentation was actually a very emotional presentation. We don't often get presentations of such nature. And it sort of opened up how Parliament works. And we often question how it works and how bills and acts are often put in